It's 7:41 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll hear from the filmmaker behind the Academy Award-nominated film Heroin.
We spoke to everyone after they came to after their overdose and got their consent to use it, but then even still continue to blur faces. We just wanted to make sure that we were not exploiting anyone and that the trust of the fire department and first responders wouldn't be hurt by us standing over top of them.
That story's just ahead on West Virginia Morning. The film Heroin, spelled with an E, has been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Short Documentary. The film follows three women in Huntington, West Virginia, who are working to address the opioid epidemic. Reporter Dave Mistich spoke with filmmaker Elaine Sheldon about the making of the film.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, wanting to do this film. Obviously, the opioid problem, particularly heroin, has been a big problem around Huntington for a long time. I mean, what specific moment, what specific incident happened that you said, I need to go make a film about this in this place?
I felt like every time I would come home and open the newspaper or go on Facebook, I would see another familiar mugshot or obituary. And it wasn't about Huntington's drug problem. It was just the fact that everyone I knew from middle school and high school was dropping like flies, it felt like. And I just wanted to try to find a more hopeful side of that story. You know, there's no clear solution, but these three women are working towards their own small solutions that I think are really admirable.
You did mention the three different women. I want to start off by talking a little bit about Jan Rader. She's the fire chief there in Huntington. And when you watch the film, you get a really good sense about what kind of person she is. Describe for me, you know, for the listeners out there, like who she is and what it is about her that makes what she's doing so special.
Well, in the film, Jan says, you know, I'm a medic, I'm a nurse, I'm built for this. She literally has the ability to help people in her DNA. She's just an incredible human with the capacity to care for people I've never really met in a public official before. She's very funny. She's the only woman on an all-male fireman squad. And so she's, you know, she's very brave. And I just admire Jan a lot. I think she keeps her cool in the most crazy situations. You know, when we were filming, I just would sort of keep focus on her because she would keep me chilled out a bit, because there were some intense moments that if I focused on the other things going around, it would be a little bit too much for me because I'm not used to those situations. But she just goes into an emergency and fixes things. And it's just, she's just an incredible West Virginian and an incredible woman that I just admire more than a lot of the people that I have documented throughout the years I've fallen in love with. But I feel like Jan Rader is number one of someone that I hope keep in touch with for the rest of my life.
And like you said, some of these moments that they find themselves in are very intense. And what I want to do is we'll throw to a clip here, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about it.
Okay, do you know, is he a known user? Or?
Well, this is the second time this week he's OD'd.
Third floor, on the left, all the way down, the door's open.
Okay. Fire department. Yeah, he's up against the door. Hey, buddy.
So in the scene, this guy is overdosed. He's behind the bathroom door. Describe what it's like to be there as a filmmaker, as a reporter, journalist, you know, an observer even, what it's like to experience that.
Yeah. Well, my husband and I made this film, and there were times where, you know, we knew Huntington had 6 to 7 overdoses every day, and the fire department was calling us the white cats because when we would come to town, there would be no overdoses. And we literally spent the night overnight at fire departments to see if we could catch something. And it all felt very voyeuristic and strange at first. And I really questioned why we were doing it. Right. Why would we follow these people in that are trying to do their job, potentially get in their way? But you know, that was a conversation I had with Jan, and she's like, you know, you're doing your job too, and you showing this could help others. And she really believed that. And so that helped me sort of get over the anxiety. But it still is the scariest thing I've ever experienced. When you're running up with Jan, you know, when she was alone getting that guy off the back of the door, she's completely alone in that apartment, walking into a situation. We have no clue what we're walking into. I'm the only one with her there. Kern was gone that day, actually. And you know, a tiny woman like Jan can fit and squeeze in between that door, that bathroom door. But, you know, if they would have been 3 minutes late and waited for someone else to show up, that guy could have died. And it was just, you just realize how close to death so many people come to. And you have 6 to 7 of those every day in Huntington. Like, I don't know. It's a great privilege to be able to witness something like that, but I don't take it lightly. And that's one of the reasons why we spoke to everyone after they came to after their overdose and got their consent to use it, but then even still continue to blur faces. Because that's someone's brother, that's someone's dad, and it's traumatic enough to wake up and see EMS around you, let alone a camera, and to think of your worst moment being documented. We just wanted to make sure that we were not exploiting anyone and that the trust of the fire department and first responders wouldn't be hurt by us standing over top of them.
I want to switch gears for a little bit and talk about two of the other women that are sort of profiled in this. Nisha Freeman is with Brown Bag Ministries. You know, I guess it could be said that Jan Rader is sort of the very first responder because she, you know, very much literally is. Nisha, I think, would sort of be like one of the sort of secondary sort of responders in a way, and not in a official way. She doesn't, you know, this Brown Bag Ministries is sort of just a nonprofit, I guess.
You're right. It's through her church, Lewis Memorial Baptist Church.
So tell me a little bit about spending time on that side of it and trying to, like, help people, you know, after they've been, their lives have been saved by someone like Jan.
Right. Well, Jan is part of the fire department. She gets up. It's her job to go. Nisha is a real estate agent, a single mom, just a very dynamic, she calls herself a church lady, dynamic church lady, who spends her evenings going out and helping women that she knows are trapped into sex work because of their drug habit, and gives them food and tries to get them into rehab. And it's definitely a thankless job that Nisha does. She's not paid for her work. She receives no recognition. She does it out of the goodness of her heart. She does it because she believes that's something God wants her to do. She does it from a Christian perspective, which is very different than what Judge Keller and Jan Rader do. So the three women together all play very different roles at different ends of the spectrum of addiction. Nisha's working with women who are currently trapped in that cycle and trying to get them out, specifically targeting women. And what's interesting is that some of those women actually get into Judge Keller's drug court. So the three women actually work together through the drug court treatment team in Cabell County, which is one of the most amazing. I haven't experienced drug court outside of Huntington and Cabell County, but what an incredible program they have going on there. And it's a volunteer position. Judge Keller doesn't even get paid to be the drug court judge.
Wow.
She's a family court judge. And so it's just, the three women were just an obvious, they had a great obvious dynamic that would make for just energizing and hopeful 40-minute film.
Right. Well, and you use that word hopeful. I mean, I'm curious. I mean, you were there, and I've spent a lot of time in Huntington. I lived there for 8 years. And it's really interesting to me because it's a story that you keep hearing about again and again and again. And, I mean, I know personally that very recently, some people that I used to hang out with have overdosed, and they're dead. And it seems like that the impact of this just keeps stretching further and further out. Is there a sense that this is ever going to get any better? Because, I mean, I think you all the women that you profiled in this film are working very diligently and very passionately in this area. But even then, they seem to have this, like, bit of exhaustion about the whole thing. I mean, they're dedicated to it, but is there any hope that this is going to improve? Or
I mean, I'm concerned for them long term. You know, I don't know what the end of this is, and it's actually getting worse. You know, it's not getting better. Carfentanil, fentanyl is making it harder to bring people back from overdoses. It's not just heroin anymore. So I don't know that we necessarily see a light at the end of the tunnel, but if we have more people like these three women being empathetic and caring and helping the people that are trapped in addiction, help them get into rehabs, help them find something that brings them fulfillment. And, you know, I think what in West Virginia, like, we have this economic situation that has left a lot of people feeling unneeded. And I can't help but think that drugs are only, you know, a sort of symptom of a bigger issue. And so I don't know that we can address the drug problem in West Virginia without addressing larger social issues and economic issues we have in the state and the country, for that matter. So I don't know that there's a ending to this. I have no clue. I don't know how it will work, but we certainly could use some more detox beds and some more recovery beds. I mean, there's plenty of work to be done. There's plenty of improvements to be made, and not enough is being done.
Elaine McMillian Sheldon, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Elaine Sheldon, who created the documentary Heroin with an E, spoke with Dave Mistich back in September. Her film has been nominated to receive an Academy Award. You can find the film on Netflix. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:52. Snow and gusty wind today, clearing in the west with highs in the 20s and low 30s. Clear skies overnight with lows in the teens. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 40s and low 50s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Support West Virginia Morning and all of the programs you rely on every day by ordering a box of Hall's chocolates during this Chocolate Challenge Fund Drive. Call 1-800-RADIO-87 or go online wvpublic.org. Do it before 10 o'clock tonight and you'll be entered into a drawing for a year of chocolates. Call 1-800-RADIO-87. Medical marijuana dispensaries are slated to open across Pennsylvania this year. They'll be selling liquids, pills, and creams made by licensed producers in the state. WPSU's Ann Danahy reports on the economic impact communities are hoping for.
Bradford is a historic town on the northern Pennsylvania border. An empty storefront there will soon be one of the state's medical marijuana clinics.
It's right in the heart of our downtown on Main Street.
Tom Reel is mayor of Bradford. He's standing in front of the future clinic, surrounded by shops and apartments in an old-fashioned downtown. To Reel, the clinic will be the same as a new pharmacy opening up.
The state's declared it to be a legal enterprise, and if it's going to go somewhere in the area and draw people from out of the region into our area, we'd welcome it in our downtown and the economic impact it would have by drawing people to our downtown who might normally not come to downtown Bradford.
And more might with the new wellness center that's slated to sell medical marijuana. Chelsea Schwab is manager of Bradford's Main Street program.
They're going to be creating jobs, driving some more traffic downtown. So I view it as a positive, just as I would with any other business coming in.
In 2016, Governor Tom Wolf signed legislation legalizing medical marijuana in Pennsylvania. The goal is to help people with conditions like cancer, seizures, and intractable pain. Economic development is also a priority in some communities that are getting dispensaries or growers. Brad Leshinsky is director of economic development and planning in Jefferson County. Brookville, he notes, is the only town getting both a grower processor and a dispenser.
Not only are we going to gain jobs from it, but we're going to have that trickle down impact with people coming into the area.
The grower is Cresco Yeltra. Leshinsky says Cresco was inundated with job seekers. Cresco Yeltra co-founder Charlie Bachtel expects the operation to have 30 to 35 employees as business ramps up, and 100 or more when it's fully operational. They expect to have medical marijuana ready to sell in February and eventually a range of choices.
Absolutely, we'll have a nice broad spectrum of cannabinoid profiles, some that are THC-focused, and others that barely have any THC in them at all.
THC is the compound in cannabis that can get users high. The company also got a separate license to run dispensaries in the southwest region of the state. Bachtel says they put an emphasis on public outreach.
And making sure that they can see as much as possible behind the curtain as to how these companies run, how these programs run, so they can understand it's not what they expect.
In Pennsylvania, the grower processors will pay a 5% tax to the state on gross receipts. According to the State Department of Revenue, that is expected to bring in slightly more than $12 million starting this year. The state has already approved the first dispensary. In Bradford, the dispensary is going in a spot where a restaurant had been. Mayor Reel notes the alley and back is next to the police station.
I think some people, you know, envision that there'd be VW buses pulling up with people with dreadlocks and tie-dye getting out, going in to buy a bag of marijuana, and that's not the case at all here.
The Bradford location will be run by Wellness Centers of Pennsylvania. Project manager Will Aganis says the company got the okay to open 6 facilities. That includes one set of dispensaries in Bradford, Dubois, and Brookville, and another in Lebanon, Altoona, and Gettysburg.
People are worried that it's going to bring crime and you're just going to get a lot of undesirable outcomes. And then the dispensaries open and none of that really typically happens. These dispensaries are very safe.
Aganis has worked in the industry for 3 years, overseeing the setup of operations. He says he understands why people may be skeptical, but he's seen the results.
We get a lot of people come in and say, I'm on chemotherapy and I just want to be able to eat again. That's a profound thing to see someone come in and say, nothing else works for me. I just want to be able to eat again. These are people who are wasting away. And this really helps them.
In State College, a Nature's Medicines dispensary is slated to open on North Atherton Street in what had been a restaurant. Partner Mark Steinmetz says medical marijuana can be effective.
But it doesn't take a lot. You don't have to get high to find relief from pain using cannabis.
In Pennsylvania, medical marijuana can only be sold in forms like liquids and creams, not as joints or bags of pot. And it can only be sold to people with one of 17 conditions a doctor has certified. Daniel Short is an attorney in Washington State with expertise in marijuana law. In 2017, the state saw $1.24 billion in sales. That meant $281 million in tax revenue.
So it's been a significant impact on our state's budget. It can be quite the tax boon to each state that legalizes either recreational or medical marijuana.
And Short says it can mean jobs.
You know, you've got to look beyond just the individuals who are working in the industry. There's also security companies. You know, there's branding companies, marketing companies, there's accountants, lawyers, a whole host of individuals who, you know, work either in the industry or provide services to the industry.
That potential for jobs and tax revenues is one reason Pennsylvania's Auditor General has recommended legalizing and taxing all marijuana, not just medical. Eugene DePasquale says Pennsylvania could get an estimated $200 million a year by regulating and taxing marijuana sales. In State College, I'm Ann Danahy.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.